The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Deadly Class Alpha, Mitch Duvall, a.k.a. Chico, and Beta student Isaiah Lentinen, a.k.a. Shabnam, stop by. And we're deep diving with co-showrunner and producer Miles Feldsaut. It's all coming up. Hello and welcome to the official Deadly Class podcast presented by Sci-Fi Wire. I am Max Tedaldi.
And I am Jackie Jennings.
And we're back for episode 2 of Deadly Class.
We're back, baby. I don't know.
In a big way.
Yeah.
In a big, big way.
Yep.
I think what's nice now is that all of the exposition, the world building, obviously it will continue, but now we're at King's Dominion.
Yeah.
We are living that life. That's our new reality.
Yeah, we kind of got all of the relationships set up. We know who's on whose side, which is everyone's on their own side for the most part. Now it's going to be like diving into episodes.
And it's, you know, we're obviously, we start off with a really just kind of like nice intro into Marcus's mindset where he's reeling right now. And he, you know, he immediately goes up to the, I think what's in the comic, the graveyard, but in the show is the rooftop.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm looking for drugs. I'm looking to alter my mental state so that I no longer have to think about this heinous, heinous act that I committed in last week's episode.
Yeah. Well, Max, let me tell you, you never forget your first kill. It messes you up. No, just kidding.
That's right. It's so romantic.
Yeah. But yeah, he's going through it. He did something awful. Even if he had his reasons, he's freaking out.
He's seeing some shit.
Yeah. And I gotta say, I don't know that drugs are the best solution here. I don't know.
No, probably not.
When you're already hallucinating the man you killed, I don't know if you're like, let's add drugs to this cocktail.
So for those of you who might not remember what actually happened when Marcus did indeed kill Rory, the homeless vagrant that he was kind of living with.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, not like a father figure, but the one relationship he probably had in his life.
Yeah.
So before we start breaking it down, let's go through a quick recap.
You're a rat, as in affiliation.
Hating what's wrong is easy. I'm going to do something about it.
You have the thing this place is supposed to nurture, and they all see it.
I'm a pacifist, man.
You're a what?
Don't you ever call me out in front of my people, because if I lose my rep, I'm dead.
I know about Marcus. You know I never kill you. But you do some shit like that again, you're going to wish I did.
I think I love you, Petra.
I don't really know what to say, Billy.
Did your mouth buy you this scar? Straight razor, or he left the eye?
It was my bunkmate at the boys' home.
I need a pig to help me find the kid that torched that boys' home.
So, yeah, Marcus killing someone, and then I feel like it's immediately, you know, into another fire where Master Lin is none too pleased with the way that the students have performed on this test and has a crazy scavenger hunt style test set up for them that maybe results in death?
Involving a riddle.
Well, it was almost like a storybook kind of magical riddle. I imagine like a leprechaun lurking under a bridge and being like, enter my riddles 3.
I was going to say a sphinx.
That's better.
Sphinxian.
That's much better. My stupid leprechaun under the bridge.
No, leprechauns and sphinxes, they all do riddles in exchange for goods.
For goods, yes.
Yeah.
And in this case, the good is
could save your life.
School, surviving.
Yeah, poison gas starts to seep in. There's a riddle that it's not clear. You solve it, but what exactly does it mean? And Marcus, being the clever lad he is, figures it out.
We not only get to see Marcus being clever, but we also get to see another skill from him, which is picking locks.
Yes, he can pick a lock.
It's sort of like, okay, and these little moments from Marcus are being slowly revealed. In the pilot, we got to see that he's a good pickpocket as well.
Yeah.
Pickpocket. So he's scrappy.
Yeah, he's Oliver Twist with a twist.
Hello, governor.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting me into your school.
Oi, Rory, you're dead. I don't know. Yeah, he picks the lock. He solves the riddle. not that that's not all interesting, because it's like, oh, okay, Marcus is like
a sweet fight scene, and yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely, and they're going from room to room. It's kind of scary.
It's really scary. It's also reveals how rigged King's Dominion is physically, that it has the ability to pump poison gas into the hall to seal off different rooms, which makes sense that that's how that place would be built. But it's very scary to suddenly realize, like, oh, the place I'm living is a death trap.
Yeah. It's like Hogwarts mixed with Mousetrap.
Yes. Yeah. And then we get that moment that Marcus figures out the riddle. He's about to pass out. He says it. And then Chico, rather than get the antidote to the poison gas, because that's what the riddle is leading them to, chooses instead to just knock Marcus down. It's
literally the most spiteful shit you could possibly do.
So spite. I would actually rather die than have you be the person who figured this out. And we got to talk to Mitch Duval, who plays Chico. And he let us in a little bit on Chico's psychology in that scene.
Yeah, it's a crazy moment. You know, like, everything in school is about pride, reputation, or, you know, credit. And I feel like going back to the Latinos, us Latinos, our pride means a lot. And I feel like for Chico, his pride means everything. So when he sees Marcus going for the antidote, he's like, no, you're not going to be the hero of the story, man. You know, because if he reaches the antidote and he survives, he's like, no, I'd rather go out with you, you know? And that really reflects on what's going to happen in episode 5. Because with the leaf, Chico's like, yo, before you get the credit as the hero that saved himself with the fish, we're both going to die before you get more pride than I do.
And yeah, I think what's nice about talking to Mitch is he's so passionate about the character. He knows the character so well. And he's done a lot of just thinking in Chico's mindset. He's totally changed his perspective. And I think a lot of what he has been thinking about, I think, is not even necessarily stuff that Rick has clocked. One of the things that I loved when he talked about was one of the moments from episode 1 where there's just this little beat that I think probably very few of the viewers were actually clocking, but that Mitch absolutely saw that moment. Was like, oh, that is going to help inform my character's motivations. And it was just great hearing him talk about that.
There's a moment in the pilot that people don't understand. And that's at the end of the episode when Marcus is in the rooftop getting drunk with all their friends. Maria comes to him and she puts a hand on his shoulder. Then we see a shot of Chico chugging a beer, watching that, and he leaves. For me, watching Maria put the shoulder on Marcus, on Chico, means something is wrong, you know? They've been together for so long. They know each other so well. So watching that moment for Chico is like, okay, something is definitely wrong. Let me do my research and let me know what's going on. And let me see what's going on. So I think that he does the research and he comes to the conclusion that Maria tricked Marcus to kill Chico. And that for Chico is betrayal, man. So he knows how to handle situations.
Now, is that something that you went and spoke with Rick about? Or is that something that, you know, just helped you build out the character on your own?
No, it was more like an intuition, you know, because even when I was filming the scene, we were so fresh to the pilot that I didn't even know what was coming. So for me, it was just like people watching Maria and be like, oh, there we go. But then when I read the second episode, I understood what that scene meant.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, this guy is out of this world, man.
So episode 2, in addition to all this great Chico stuff, Chico and Maria, we'll get more of that later for sure.
There's crazy shit that happens with the two of them.
Yeah, it's very insane. We get the introduction in episode 2 of a character who fans of the comic know will play a significant, to say the least, role in the rest of it, and that is Shabnam.
Shabba-Shabnam.
Shabs, who I'm going to refer to here on out as Shabs, and it is with a Z at the end, and I need everyone to know that. Shabs.
Count it, that's locked in forever.
Yeah,
Shabs.
It's canon.
And his intro is so dorky and cute, but also, like, he's he's just owning his dorkdom.
Yes.
It's this level of just earnestness, and you get the sense he wants to be class president. It's the nerd running for president. And again, we see another moment from Marcus where he feels like he has to step in and save the day.
Help Shabs.
So heroic. I think that if you've got this episode on DVR and you're rewinding through the moments, there is an amazing facial expression from Lex when Marcus says, well, he was getting bullied. I had to do something. And Lex is just like, it's like, kill me now.
Yeah.
What is your deal?
Yeah.
You got this rep, but you're just like,
you're lame,
you're
dude.
Like the Superman of, it's like, what is there to you? You're boring, man.
And we got to talk a bunch to Isaiah, who plays Shabs.
He is literally one of the funniest people.
And he's very funny.
He's so funny.
Very cool, very funny guy. And he talked to us a little bit about just how he came to the role, casting, and kind of like what he thinks, how he sees Shabs.
He's very aware of the idea that he's a legacy. He has a family name to uphold, and that he's better than all of these rats. So it's okay that he's 4 feet tall and 300 pounds, because they'll all see. And also, his entire life, his mom was probably telling him he's the handsomest boy in the world.
Were you involved in student government?
Not student government per se. I played tennis in high school. That was
really
my thing. I know. You look at me and you probably say, that kid definitely played golf, but no, it's not golf.
Well,
it's tennis.
I wouldn't think that. But also, how far apart in your mind are tennis and golf? Because in my mind, they are cousins.
They are almost the exact same thing.
They're kissing cousins.
Where did you country club as a high schooler?
Yeah. I think that makes sense. Tennis, yeah. Not in a good or a bad, just like, yeah.
I see you as class secretary slash drama geek.
Oh, drama geek for sure. Actually, shockingly close. Class vice president.
Oof.
Okay.
You pensed it.
Yeah.
You pensed
it. I pensed, and I ran on the platform because you elected separately. You did not run on a ticket at Chatham High. The platform I ran on was vice president doesn't matter, so you might as well just vote for me. I just listed a bunch of famous vice presidents. Was like, you've never heard of these people, right? Cool. I'd love for you to vote for me. I want this on my resume.
Vote for me so that you can forget about me.
Yeah, who cares? Like, what are we doing?
That's amazing.
I was then defeated. I forget when that was.
But you were an incumbent.
Yeah. I guess I didn't do a very good job. I was a heartbeat away from the presidency.
One of the things that I loved about reading Deadly Class, and you get to obviously get introduced to the cliques. My high school was batshit crazy, the way that it was set up physically. And so this high school, it's a public high school, and they have since demolished it. But at the time that I went to Newton North High School, it was a quarter mile long hallway. Every section of this main street, as we called it, because it's essentially a street because it's quarter mile long, was a different color. Whoever designed this building was not thinking when they actually built it and put those colors in. But all of the different cliques had a different color.
So
it was like, if you were a drama kid, you hung out in red. And if you played on the football team, you hung out in purple. And
that was just known. Like,
that
nobody
was just known.
It was just like, this is just a known thing. You just knew purple. When you come in as a freshman, if you're on the football team, the seniors are on purple. So you're at purple.
And I feel like it's because you had 4 years, there was always overlap. And so there was no way to free yourself of that system. Let's start with maybe Billy and Petra, just because it's such an iconic moment.
So painful.
Young love.
Yeah.
Young and in love.
He's just, he's in love with his friend. He gets some advice from Saya, which is, you know, fine. It's pretty good advice, but it's coming from it's like from a woman to a boy.
And that moment is so good, too, because you also get like Saya and Billy are friends.
Mm-hmm.
They're totally friends.
Yeah. They might not act like it, but in school,
yeah.
But they're friends outside of school. Yeah. So Billy, you know, kind of finally tells Marcus and Sai and his friends, like, he's he's got to say something to Petra.
He's got those feelings.
Yeah, he's got those feelings for Petra. He finally tells her. He's probably pretty drunk. Oh, and he says, I love you.
Right off the bat. It started off so strong.
Yes.
It's like, this is going to come across as dorky, but I think you're really cool and smart.
Yeah.
Really strong start.
And you're like, oh, this is great.
Keep going.
Keep. Ugh. And then he hits her with the I love you. And she's like, I think I need to go have sex with someone else. I think the only solution here.
Yeah. And look, it's been a long time since I was a teenager, but there were so many components of that that felt so authentic to like my experience in general, where you had moments from episode one where Billy and Petra are talking and it's just like really natural and they're dynamic. Just there's nothing awkward about it. And then all of a sudden he acknowledges the fact that he likes her and he what's his opening line? He was like, pizza, Italy.
Yeah.
He's got that's what he's got.
Yeah. It's a very earnest, I appreciate it. I feel like a lot of times the trope of like, oh, I don't know how to talk to girls gets played, which is irritating just because it's like, that's not exactly what's going through. It's like, you don't know how to say how you feel. It's not that you don't know how to talk to girls. It's that your feelings are complicated. And I think he gets that across. It's like, yeah, he's just not good at saying what he feels, what he wants. And Petra, she doesn't reject him, but she freaks out.
No. And if I had to guess what was going on in her head, and this is pure conjecture, but I feel like she likes him too.
Totally. But it's like, that's way too much.
That's way too much. Like, she's probably drunk as well.
Yeah.
And she's like, I need to get out of this situation immediately. There's a hot body.
Yeah.
That's my escape.
Who's already naked the whole party.
He's been naked the entire time.
And nobody's like, hey, dude, you're fucking naked. Like, that's, yeah. That, I gotta say, that is another thing that never quite happened at any parties that I, well, well, because I'm like, I did hang out with the theater kids, but it was probably like non-sexual nudity. It was like, why am I covering my body? And you're like, what? Because of social norms.
We need to strip all of the falsities that we've ingrained in our psyches.
Yeah, that probably happened. Would you have been a Billy, a Petra, a Victor? Are you like the dude
in that crowd?
Yeah.
Mm.
Are you the one who's like confessing your love? Or are you the one who's like, oh my God, too cool for this?
I am definitely.
Are you walking around naked? Like,
hey. Sure. Yeah, so maybe probably slightly more clothed than Victor. I think that I'm probably Billy at the party and then Lex in my brain where I'm like super just awkward, but like probably got a good heart. And then in my mind, I'm like, fuck this dude and fuck you and fuck him.
Yeah.
And then the rest of my life has just been a slow transition of that Lex in me coming out as a more vital part of my outward display and behavior.
Interesting.
Yeah, so now I'm a dickhead.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's my life.
Oh, good to know.
So you've clearly got a little girl crush on Petra.
Love. I love her.
I mean, she's super cool. And it also seems like everyone at the school kind of has a crush on her too. Is it the style for you? Is it the demeanor? Is it the eating the pizza at the party and not giving up? Talk about what anyone thinks about her going up and messing with Victor the hot body.
That's a huge part of it, the pizza. I think she's – I like that she looks at killing from this, like, crazy academic perspective. Like, it's very clinical for her, which I think is so insane and interesting. I don't know. I just think she's cool. She seems like someone who – she seems like someone I can be friends with. I'm like, ooh. Marcus is lashing out, trying to, as Saya says, he's trying to get himself killed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Shit's happening.
He's
seeing Rory.
Yeah.
And we don't know if it's, how much of it is the damage, how much of it is the weed, how much of it is the alcohol.
Yeah.
Most likely a combination of those three.
All of it. Yeah. And then there's him and Willie. One of the ways he lashes out is he hears Willie talking about all his kills.
It's fronting.
He's fronting.
Mm-hmm.
He confronts him. And we get Willie saying in a pretty mature way, like, hey, man, don't ever do that again. Like, my rep is keeping me alive.
The way that Willie does it, I think it would have been so easy for him to have lashed out and in front of everyone, like pinned Marcus to the ground and said, like, you know, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
But he doesn't. And he really, the second he, you know, approaches Marcus when he's on the porch, he's not even really that mad. He's just like, you can't do that in front of other people.
Yeah.
You get the sense that he really understands what Marcus is going through.
Yeah.
So it's like future best friend.
Yeah.
That's future best friend material.
Like right some there. Patience. Just like, hey, man, don't ever do it again.
But also cut the shit out.
Yeah. And he can't really say, or I'll kill you, because he won't. But don't do it. I'll have you killed. And we also, in this moment, we get a slight change from the comics, where in the, for those of you guys who have read the comics, Willie has never killed anybody. The setup to his backstory is very similar. People break in, try to kill his dad. But in the story, in the comics, it's his uncle, I think, who kills the people, gives Willie the gun and says, tell everyone you did it, helps him earn his rep. In the show, he says he actually does kill the people who break into his apartment and also accidentally shoots his dad, which I think is a, it's a pretty big change, but I also get why it gives Willie's character this like extra burden, you know, like he has killed, he knows how bad it can be and he doesn't want to do it again. I think it's interesting. Yeah.
And a throwback to the interview that we had with Rick last week where he was talking about the elements that had to change for the pilot. And one of those was making sure that Saya did not kill a cop right away because it was like, who wants to empathize and like a cop killer from the first time you meet her?
Yeah.
And he almost did the exact opposite with Willie, which was to have him actually kill someone.
Yeah.
That someone is his father. And because of that, you're like, my God, this poor kid.
Yeah.
And you immediately empathize with him as well right there.
Yeah. You understand. It is sort of like takes his innocence away in a way that, like in the comics, I think he's a very innocent character.
Mm-hmm.
One of the few people in Kings, maybe the only person in King's Dominion who's really like, innocent, who's like kind of unspoiled. And it feels like Marcus wants to protect him a little bit. This puts them, I think, a little bit more on an even plane where they're like going through. They can relate to each other on this plane of like, we don't like to kill. We've done it and we don't like it. Or at least we have a hard time with it.
I mean, it's tough to really relate with someone who's like, killing is just the best, isn't it? You like it, I like it, we all like it. Let's be at a school for assassins together.
Yeah, no one really has quite that perspective, I don't think.
Hopefully not.
But yeah.
I also love the way it was framed, that flashback. They've set a precedent now
that
we're going to be doing these flashbacks in the style of the comic book.
Yeah.
And it was so beautiful the way that we kind of, you know, look past Marcus and Willie and we go into the window of the house. But that window is displaying the flashback.
It's cool.
Really artfully done.
It's one of those touches that could either really work or really not work. That you could be watching it and be like, I'm sorry, how the fuck is this animated right now? But instead, you're just kind of like, oh, yeah, it's like a memory. They're doing it with memories, which feels like, your memory is a little like, not animated, but it's
distorted.
Yeah.
Yeah, your brain does funny things with memories.
Yeah, you can do things with animation you can't do with actors and pull things off.
We actually got to sit down with co-showrunner and producer Miles Feldsaut, who had some really great insight into the flashback and the decision to change the nature of Willie's origin story from the comic.
As time passes, stories just keep evolving. And while there's a lot of moments in Deadly Class that we feel like those can't change and those are canon and those parts of the story have to exist, there's other things where your thinking and Rick's thinking evolve. As far as Willie's backstory, we want to land the fact that he's a pacifist for a reason, that he has a motivation, for this moral decision. And we felt like this storyline was going to deliver that very, very effectively and kind of launch him onto this journey towards being a pacifist. And his story is one of the hardest ones to tell because sometimes as a writer, you feel backed into a corner in a school for assassins where you have a character that doesn't want to use violence, that can be very challenging to write. So his character is in a kind of delicate dance that we're doing. We're trying to kind of weave him into the story in a way that kind of keeps that moral center because he is our moral compass in this story.
If you like a good murder mystery story, you'll love June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game where Detective June Parker unravels the mystery of her sister's death. Travel back to the beautifully illustrated 20s, find clues, discover hidden objects, and watch the story unfold with new chapters released weekly. Put your detective skills to the test. Download June's Journey on Android or iOS, or play online via Facebook games.
So we have this amazing flashback, and then I don't want to bring up the pink elephant in the room, mm-hmm. which is actually just a massive dildo mm-hmm. that gets shoved into Shabnam's face mm-hmm. and then subsequently cut in half. But yeah. I feel like we should mention it.
How can we not? Shabnam's mom's double-sided dildo. And you know Isaiah had something to say about this. What was filming that scene like? Was it hard not to break? I mean, you're just getting wailed on with the
massive pink dildo, yeah. I think is the...
It's red. We referred to it, because double ended, we referred to it on set several times as the Darth Maul dildo. It was honestly like that was a really fun scene to film, because I had like $10,000 in motion picture money that I got to throw up in the air. I would honestly say getting the throw right was the hardest part of the scene, because Jack Gillett was on point. His intensity was there. His movement was there. And getting hit wasn't that much of an issue, but if you notice, this is going to air after episode 2, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So if you notice, Jack throws it down and it lands beside me after Saya cuts it in half and saves me. Thank you very much, Lana. In one of the takes, Jack accidentally throws the other half of the dildo, which is quite heavy, right into my groin.
Aww.
That was the roughest part. That was the roughest part of filming that. I got him back, though. Don't worry.
So one of the other things that we spoke to Isaiah about is that, you know, he is entering the show after the pilot has been filmed. He's not in the first episode, and he's joining this cast that's already has these connections, has already spent, you know, a few weeks filming this pilot.
Yeah.
And what it's like as an actor to come into that situation. And it's, you know, and we realize that all of the actors from the show have very different experiences with their tryouts, with their casting, with their, you know, first days on set, which.
Yeah. I don't even like walking into a restaurant when everyone else is already sitting down, and he came into a cast where like they'd already shot a whole pilot and had a year of bonding. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I had gotten the audition, like the little email with the breakdown. Mm-hmm. I want to say mid-August. My schedule is just really busy at that point, and you know, I was auditioning a ton and moving around doing stuff a ton. So initially, I actually declined the audition initially, so I had more time to do some other stuff.
Ooh, power moves. Love it.
Big alpha move there.
So Isaiah Shabnam, obviously, like, his front is this sort of beta male persona that no one is going to think of as threatening.
Yeah, they take over his house and trash it.
And he's busy, you know, getting a bunch of cash so that he can have sex with one of his classmates, which is ridiculous.
So strange.
And then we have the exact opposite of that, which is Chico, who's, you know, his mask, or I don't even think it's a mask. That's just sort of like who he is.
Yeah.
It's just this alpha male. And he invites Maria out to this dinner, which you think is just this amazing romantic gesture that they're going to have a night in the town. And that is very obviously not what goes down.
Yeah. So even this dinner that should be nice is shitty, because Maria wants to go to the party with her friends and Chico won't let her. It's just another controlling, abusive tactic. And we get, I think my favorite scene in the show so far is between Lana, Saya, and Maria, where they're talking about going to the party, and you can see the shift as soon as Chico walks in the door, and you can see Saya kind of trying to negotiate, like, how do I help my friend without making it worse for her?
Yeah. And their friendship is so believable, right? They just, it was like slut, skank, but they're like, they're dancing around the room. It just, it felt very authentic, their friendship. Yeah.
And we actually, Maria kind of talked about filming that scene with Lana and Mitch.
You know, the thing is that Lana and I are really, really good friends.
Mm-hmm.
From day one. We share everything. It's amazing. And so we have that very strong connection and relationship.
And their boyfriends
are really good friends
as well.
With each other. Yeah. Oh, my God. It's perfect.
I see them, look at each other from across the room.
And loving each other.
They
is,
won't stop making eye contact until they hug.
Durbin. Yeah. Is that something that I have to be worried about? Okay. So that was very easy for us to recreate, but at the same time, those were kind of the first scenes that we shot for the season, and we were very, very nervous and very insecure with our characters. We never told this to Rick. We played it very cool, we knew what we were doing, but secretly we would say, oh my God, we sucked. But everything was scripted.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I like what you said though, because you don't really see a lot of shows when with teens when they're talking like this. And I love it because they're actually teens. This is how teens talk.
And you see female characters being, you are either the princess or the whore.
Yep.
And here, I think Rick and Miles have very strong female in their lives, and mm-hmm. they write these characters as they see women, three-dimensional, contradictory people.
Mm.
And that's great because we get to be ourselves finally and unapologetically fucking alive.
So they have their date. As far as forced dates go, they got some pasta, they got some red wine.
It was a classy establishment.
Yeah. Not what any date I ever went on in high school looked like.
Applebee's all the way.
Yeah. I never actually went on a date in high school.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was fine. I had fun.
I feel like the summer after high school counts as a date in high school, maybe.
That wasn't an issue either. But still, very nice. They go to a restaurant. It seems nice. Forgetting the fact that she doesn't want to be there. And then...
Well, they get interrupted during the
interrupted.
Dinner.
Yeah. Which I thought that was going to be the whole annoyance. That an annoying friend comes by and she's like, this was supposed to be us.
And he's focused on the friend that
comes. And you
invited
this guy to sit with us? Are you kidding me? And that's not...
At all what's going on.
Yeah.
Total setup.
Yeah.
So the entire actual date was revolving around this hit that he was doing for his dad.
Yeah.
And that moment in the car is genuinely terrifying.
Yeah.
I think particularly seeing it from Maria's perspective where this guy gets shot right in front of her.
And something about that silencer.
Blood, I know. All over her face.
Yeah. She's covered in blood. And it's right after they do, he lets them have a moment where they do some coke together, and then he shoots them in the head. So it's man, talk
last
about.
Last hurrah.
Yeah. Talk about life and death,
And that scene, I think this was my favorite scene from episode 2, is Chico's then conversation with Maria, where he reveals to her that he knew everything that she was plotting and that he still loves her, which is insane. And, I think Mitch's take on not only that moment, but what it means for his character was just so well thought out and well put.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it's crazy, man, because it's kind of a sexual, twisted, dark moment, When I read that scene specifically, I knew this was the scene that I can use to prove to the audience who Chico really is, man. This guy is a mastermind psychopath. So I really had to go in there, and I had to feel the betrayal of Maria. What I get with Chico is before Marcus got to the school, everything was perfect, Everyone belonged to their own gang. Every clique respected each other. And when this this new rat comes into the school, starts messing up with everyone's territory. She was just like, who the fuck is this guy, man, you know? And so, for me, the moment where Maria, where she finds out about that, such a betrayal, man. And I feel like all the Latino people, we're so driven by emotions. We're so emotional with everything we do, with everything we say. I wanted to get that going on, you know? Even though it's a scary moment and Chico is in a dark place, he reminds Maria that it doesn't matter what happens, she's always going to be. And it's so crazy because everything is so clear in Chico's head. And that's something that also gave me a sense of naiveness in the character. He really thinks Maria is going to be his wife. He really thinks she's going to raise up their kids and they're going to live happily ever after once they get out of the school and Chico takes over the business. And it's like, wow, you know, like at the end of the day, you get reminded that all of us are kids, you know, and every kid has like a dream and they have like fantasies about the future. And it's so amazing to see like a little bit of a kid come out in such a dark moment.
So Maria's going to be okay. She's going to be totally fine, but she is going to be kind of living under the grasp of Chico. So yeah. However okay that could possibly be.
She's really got a – it's a real house of cards she's living in. Yeah.
And then the house party gets broken up the way any mm-hmm. great house party gets broken up, which is the cops showing up and everyone's scramming.
Yeah. You gotta know your exits. Anytime you're at a – kids, if you're in high school and you're at a party – before you put your coat down,
preach.
Before you find the keg, you find the exits, not for fire safety, but because someone's mom is going to come home.
Words of wisdom.
The cops are going to come. Get your ass out the garage, usually the best way.
Jackie, where were you when I was 14 and needed this information?
Yeah.
Who am I kidding? 17 is when I need that information.
You've got to know the exits. Party gets broken up. Date ends in death. Question, the Quaker Oats. You know how Billy's like, there's Quaker Oats in every house?
Mm.
Do you have a thing that you're like, this is always in the pantry? Like a comfort family? I can say Ovaltine.
Ooh.
I can't remember the last time I made a cup of Ovaltine, but it's something that my grandparents always had in the cupboard. So I'm just like, we need Ovaltine. You certainly don't. Anyway, I just thought that. I was like, oh, Quaker Oats, not so much. Ovaltine, no, for me.
It's so funny you brought that up because now I just had a flash to my childhood pantry.
Uh-huh.
And as someone who grew up in the 90s, this was during the fat is bad, but like sugar, like freaking go for it. Have whatever you want. And it was Snackwell's Devil's Food Cake.
Yeah.
Remember those? They're just like little like pucks of sugar.
Yes.
Wow. That really, I think that's like, that's how to just grow up strong.
Snackwell's too were the artificial. It was like sugar free, but instead it was chemicals that trick your brain into think. It's like,
like saccharin and margarine. Uh-huh. Ugh.
Yeah. It's like a Diet Coke in cookie form. It's very bad for you. Okay. But so then we get back to.
Explains so much.
Yeah. It's why I'm 6'7" and you're.
5'4"?
Yeah.
dainty little man. So Marcus is like maybe feeling a little bit better about things.
Yeah, it seems like
about it. His life.
He's kind of rationalizing it for better or worse. Yeah, he's feeling better. He's
feeling good.
Good.
And
he's got two hot ladies into him. Come on.
And who wouldn't feel amazing after meeting the coolest new roommate in the world with the monogram pajamas? It's Shabnam.
Shabs. Monogram pajamas. I'll tell you what. As a lady over 30, I have recently started myself indulging in, I'm like, you know what? Get rid of the flannels and the oversized t-shirts. I want like nice.
A collection.
Pajamas that I paid for to be pajamas. Not just things that I've cycled out of my wardrobe and I'm like, I guess I'll wear this at night. And it is really wonderful.
Game changer.
Game changer. When if I ever have to travel, I always bring like a nice set of pajamas to be like, treat myself.
So it's
highly recommend.
Such high quality that you probably don't even refer to them as pajamas anymore. It's like a nightgown or
Thank
something
you.
Like that.
Well, it's not a nightgown because I'm not 85.
I'm seeing a gown. It's like a whole.
It's just like pants
white,
on top.
Paisley. Sort of like a chiffon. I'm just naming fabrics right now. I don't know.
It's very nice, and I respect Shabnam a lot for those choices.
I mean, respect. He's owning it.
Yeah.
He doesn't give a fuck. He's just like, yeah, I'm Shabnam. And guess what? No one's going to steal my pajamas because it's got my name on them.
Yeah.
He's playing defense with the pajamas.
Big time.
Yes.
Shabnam, pajamnam.
And amazing last scene. Guess who we meet is Fuckface.
Yes.
In an almost like panel for panel recreation of his sort of triumphant comic book return, and we see like a little taste of him in the boys' home.
Yes.
Initially, but
oh yeah, he's back. Get the animation of him J&O to that poodle.
Oh yeah.
Very beginning.
Which is disturbing. Yeah. He's very excited.
I mean, at least pick a border collie, you know?
Which are clearly the most attractive.
I'm just kidding.
One of the things that we haven't spoken too much about is music in Deadly Class. And, you know, we touched on it in episode one, where it's just like all of these licensed tracks, all of these deep cuts, B-sides. I mean, again, I'm doing the air quotes because I feel like we're familiar with some of the tracks, but it was really cool to see that that wasn't just for show in the pilot. It makes me feel like they're going to be bringing those back every single episode, which I think is super exciting and just gives a layer of authenticity to an 80s experience.
Yeah.
So, Jackie, you might be wondering if I laboriously paused this episode probably about 30 times to inspect individual frames, right?
I was just gonna ask.
I jumped the gun. So we've got a slightly different take on this week's deep dive into the moments you might have missed. Those frames where if you don't pause and rewind to rewatch, you could miss it. Co-showrunner and producer Miles Feldsaat is gonna take us through it. In one of the first scenes, Marcus is walking the hallways of King's Dominion and someone is etching a VF into the wall.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
People that know will get it. I don't want to reveal on the podcast exactly what it is, but fans will understand what that is.
Got it. So if someone has read the comic, they should know exactly what that means.
Not necessarily. I didn't say it was fans of the comic.
There's an early scene in the graveyard where we see some photos of people that have presumably passed away. Who are those people and where did those photos come from?
Our art department. as far as who's buried in the school, that is kind of one of the big things that we'll get into next year as kind of Marcus really unpacks what this place is and what it means to go to school here. As we kind of like build towards, you know, what we're referring to as the great exam. Maybe that's too spoilery. Let's just say who's buried in the graveyard will be something that Marcus unpacks in the second season.
Marcus is drinking a beer that's a Dualman Light. I think it's difficult to make out. Does that mean anything?
Just that he couldn't get a real beer.
The restaurant that Chico and Maria go to is called Spicoli Piatti. Is this a reference to Spicoli from Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
Busted. I remember our producing director, Adam Kane, and I were talking about that, and we were like, no one was ever going to notice that, but you caught us.
Yes. Perfect. That's what I live for. All right. So that, I think, wraps us up. That's the whole episode.
That's up too.
We tackled it.
Yeah.
So thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Again, like we live for those subscriptions. That's our thing. That's our bag.
Yeah.
That keeps the roof over the head.
It keeps the roof over the head. It puts the lotion in the basket and the roof over the head. Yeah.
We got really creepy in this podcast.
I know, but what do you expect?
Those are our personalities.
So
don't forget to follow us at Sci-Fi Wire on the Twitters, on the Facebooks, all those socials. You're aware of them.
Yeah, all of it. And we'll see you next week for episode, you guessed it, the next one.
Number three.